Thousands of football fans from Wisconsin and beyond are in Green Bay for the NFL Draft at Lambeau Field. It's Friday, April 25th, and this is Wisconsin Today Morning News. Good morning, I'm Alex Crow. Coming up on the show today, some Wisconsin school districts say they will comply with a directive to eliminate DEI, as state education leaders have opposed doing so. And it's budget writing season in Wisconsin. We'll hear from the WPR politics team helping us break it all down. Stay with us.
Music with more.
I am personally honored to be able to shepherd so many different types of music for folks to consider. But I leave it to the listener to be able to meet the music where they are at, to help them grow their ears through these stories, histories, and the community connections that can be forged with listening to music.
Join Dr. Jonathan Overby on The Road to Higher Ground, Saturdays on WPR Music.
205,000 people attended the first night of the NFL draft in Green Bay. As Joe Schultz reports, the crowd was electric well before the Packers went on the clock.
Chance-filled the northeast corner of the Lambeau Field parking lot as the NFL commissioner welcomed fans to the NFL draft in Green Bay. Several hours later, the crowd erupted again when the Packers selected wide receiver Matthew Golden with the 23rd overall pick. He's the first receiver the Packers have taken in the opening round since 2002, when the team drafted Javon Walker. Tyler Schramm is a Packers fan from Ashwaubenon. He says seeing his team pick a wide receiver in the first round for the first time in decades was unbelievable.
For it to actually happen on the biggest stage in Green Bay, Wisconsin, means the world to the fans.
One ESPN analyst had Golden listed as the second best receiver in the draft. Joe Schultz, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Fans traveled from across the country to be a part of the draft. A few of them spoke about their first impressions of Green Bay and Wisconsin.
Got here this morning about 6 o'clock, and everything, even at the restaurant, we saw nothing but Packer gear. So we figured Green Bay people, they love their Packers.
Really friendly people. Everybody's super friendly. Tried cheese curds yesterday. They were awesome. So, now we're in search of the best wings around here.
We knew it was going to be cold. We definitely looked up. I think in the South right now, we're like 85, 86, and you guys still windy, a little cold, so we definitely had to dress right.
We flew into Milwaukee. First thing we noticed was, compared to Phoenix's, how green it was. And then the second thing we noticed was the hospitality. Everybody's just really friendly here, go with the flow, great vibes.
That was Haven Melton of New Jersey and Joe Ippolito of New Jersey, George Allen of Georgia, and Jeremy Conrad of Arizona. The U.S. Army Reserve says the suspension of a commander at Wisconsin's Fort McCoy is not related to the portraits of President Donald Trump and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth being tampered with. On April 14, the Department of Defense social media account posted an image of rows of portraits outlining Fort McCoy's chain of command. Trump and Hegseth's pictures were facing the wall. The base's garrison commander, Shayla Baez Ramirez, was suspended 4 days later. A spokesperson said it was not for misconduct. A statement from the U.S. Army Reserve says the suspension was for, quote, administrative reasons, and neither she nor any other base leader were responsible for what happened to the portraits. At least 7 military leaders at bases around the country have been removed from their posts this month for reported, quote, loss of confidence in their ability to lead. Some Wisconsin school districts say they will comply with a Trump administration directive to prove they've eliminated diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. Corrine Hess reports this comes as state education leaders have opposed doing so.
The Department of Education is demanding school leaders sign a letter saying they're complying with federal civil rights laws. If not, they could lose federal funding. The State Department of Public Instruction says it won't comply, but at least 6 school boards say they will. Christina Norby is on the Johnson Creek School Board. She says she doesn't see the harm in signing it.
I don't want our school to be discriminating based on race and, you know, all those things, essentially violating any kind of civil rights things. And I don't think we are, but if we're not, I see no harm in signing it.
A federal judge has blocked the Trump administration from cutting federal funding to schools. Corrine Hess, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Advocates for faculty and staff at the University of Wisconsin-Madison say it's time to organize and protest federal attacks on higher education. They hosted a panel on campus yesterday. The university stands to lose millions of federal research dollars through proposed cuts by the Trump administration, and leadership says private donations won't be enough to cover the loss. Panelist Don Moynihan is a public policy professor at the University of Michigan. He says federal dollars at universities are key for funding projects for public good, and in their absence, private companies won't be motivated to fund things like basic science and PhD students.
The university involvement here was to serve a public purpose, and the private sector is not going to step in to fill that public purpose.
He says faculty should take collective action, like a one-day strike, to protest federal cuts. A quick note, WPR is a service of the University of Wisconsin-Madison and the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board. Coming up, we'll hear from the WPR politics team about some twists to the start of the state budget season. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Doug Gordon, host of Beta. Beta is pioneering.
You know, hitman's living in the shadows, and you have to be anonymous, and you have to be kind of emotionally closed off.
And provocative.
My father used to say that he would punch you so hard that you would go back up to God.
And always playful. Gangbusters?
Gangbusters, yeah. That's it.
Saturdays at 11 and Sundays at 10 on WPR News.
And finally, it's a budget year in Wisconsin, and if recent history is any sort of guide, it's about the time when Republicans who run the state legislature will start rewriting Governor Tony Evers' state budget proposal. But there are added factors this year that could complicate that process. WPR's Rich Kramer and Anya Van Wagtendonk joined Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson to talk about them.
So this will be the fourth two-year budget Governor Tony Evers has worked on since taking office, each one with a Republican legislature. And while they don't really work together on these things, they have figured out a way to get budgets done. So I'm just wondering if enough has changed this year to complicate that. Let's start with Evers' veto powers, Rich. What did the Supreme Court decide about Evers' so-called 400-year veto?
So looking back a bit, Republicans in the legislature wrote a two-year school funding increase into the state budget back in 2023. It was set to expire this year. Evers used his veto pen to cross out some digits and a hyphen and extended that funding increase through the year 2024-25. The 4-3 ruling from the Supreme Court's liberal majority said the Wisconsin Constitution doesn't limit the governor's partial veto power based on how much it changes policy.
And at the end of the day, what does the decision mean?
It means that schools will be able to increase local property taxes for the next 400 years, but it also means that Evers and future governors can veto digits and hyphens as they see fit. I should note that in 2017, former Republican Governor Scott Walker struck individual digits in a state budget to change a one-year moratorium on school referendums aimed at raising taxes for energy efficiency projects into a 1,000-year moratorium.
So this partial veto is already considered the strongest in the nation, and now the court is saying it does apply when it comes to this policy, which the majority even acknowledged is considerable. Anya, what do we know about how Republicans might deal with that?
Yeah, like Rich said, this isn't the first time a governor has used the veto like this, but now it's set in stone that he can. So if you are a Republican drafting the budget, you have to think hard about not leaving in phrasing that could be played with in this way. One thing that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has suggested is that they won't use digits, so that could make strikeouts harder. He said that they might also be able to use AI to come up with solutions, so it will definitely be interesting to see some of the verbiage that comes out of this drafting process.
So potentially taking digits out of a state budget about money. And yet against that backdrop, Evers and Republicans are apparently negotiating. What are they talking about?
The crux of negotiations right now is a tax cut. That is the central priority of this Republican legislature. And they've said for a while that they want to pass a tax cut bill before the budget process. Evers has said no way. He will not sign a separate tax bill. He says that, you know, you can't know how to cut if you don't know what else you're spending money on. And in the last few days, both Republican leaders and Evers have said they've had good, productive talks, that they are moving towards some kind of tax deal. Although, of course, generally, Republicans and Democrats have different priorities on the details of how to cut taxes. And Republicans have said they will consider doing the cut through the budget process as Evers wants.
All that aside, it sounds like there is another factor that could disrupt budget talks. What are the governor and legislative leaders saying about what's happening with federal funding?
Yeah, it totally depends who you talk to, but certainly there's a level of uncertainty in Washington that makes it a little hard to know, for example, if there are going to be gaps that the state will then want to fill in. The other effect that uncertainty could have is with the timing of the budget. 2 years ago, we had a signed budget by the July 4th holiday weekend. This time around, I am hearing that things could go way later in the summer, in part because of those spending questions. But given that both sides do sound optimistic about how talks have been progressing, we continue to live in hope.
And Rich, you've done some reporting on this. We talk about the state budget, but how much of it depends on those federal funds?
A fair amount. The current state budget represents around $100 billion in spending. That's bolstered by something like $28 billion in federal money. Of that, around 60% goes to the State Department of Health Services for things like state-run medical assistance programs, so think Medicaid. So we're talking about a substantial amount of money that hasn't really been in question during past state budget negotiations.
That was WPR's Rich Kramer and Anya Van Wagtendonk speaking with WPR political editor Sean Johnson. And finally, quick check of weather before letting you go for the weekend. We'll see some clouds today with highs in the 40s and 50s. Rain ending early on in the west, but then lingering for a while in the east. No precipitation overnight, lows down in the 30s across the state. Highs back into the 50s and 60s tomorrow with no rain expected. Highs in the 60s on Sunday. And that'll do it for this Friday. Thanks for being with us for Wisconsin Today Morning News. I'm your host, Alex Crowe, and our producers today were Bridget Bowden and John Davis. Have a great rest of your day and a fantastic weekend. We'll talk to you again soon.